Diving into the details of the presentation, this concept of
that was
we get to paragraph 4? Paragraph 4 talks about the people that came from Iraq. The people that came from Iraq were being approached by the feminine part. Now, the right of really is an entry in our country. It doesn't impact on the legal rights of the state. As I said, that women have rights to have some of their children's power to be better. They have to be better. And then there may be some conditions in the agreement. So, for example, it may say that for the next year you will be registering your tax return on time and paying promptly, so that we ratchet up on the compliance going forward. We don't find ourselves a year from now again making another compliance. Paragraph 14 talks to cases where the commissioner is not bound by the compromise. These are the very obvious ones. The debtor didn't make disclosure of material facts or incorrectly disclosed material facts. This is something, again, that came through the comment process. Originally, it was simply did not make full and frank disclosure. Then the question arose as to, well, what happens if there was a very small amount that wasn't disclosed? Asset for 100 grand or 1,000 grand that wasn't disclosed. So the concept of materiality has come into the regulation. If there was a condition in the agreement that wasn't met, well, then the agreement goes away. And once again, if you're liquidated or sequestrated before the payments have been made, well, then once again, we revert back to the situation and we start again with the full amount of debt because we're now in liquidation proceedings and the full claim needs to be made and liquidated. Now, the effect of the condition not being bound is that the agreement essentially falls away and we go back to the position as before the agreement. As is the case with the settlement of disputed tax debts, record keeping is important. So, again, there needs to be a register with a fair amount of detail as to who, how much, and why was compromised or written. Again, to make sure that there's a proper audit trail to be followed. Reporting. Okay, two aspects to the reporting. In the financial statements, you need the amount of tax that's written or compromised, and then to the Minister of Finance and the Auditor General, an annual summary report of the tax debts written or compromised. Then, just to wrap up the regulations, some housekeeping. The power to write off a compromise may be delegated by the Commissioner. Clearly, the Commissioner cannot look at all of these writings for compromises. And then the final part of the regulation is that the exercise may not be any personal, financial, or other relationship between the debtor and the person making the decision to compromise, just to ensure that there is independence with that decision. That then is the overview of the regulations.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. That takes us through the regulations today. Are there any questions, members? Ms. Fox, Ms. Davidson, Ms. Jeffy, and Ms. Bunch.
Question is page 5, social justice conflict. The other one related to that in some way are the time frames respect to compromises and the public sector afterwards. The first one that struck me as we went through this, I'd be the first to say we don't want to pursue something that's going to compromise us increasing our revenue. But on the other hand, and therefore I'm talking about the tax debt will be uneconomical to pursue in certain cases and so on. I think one would like to hear some of the balances involved here. I certainly agree with perhaps the reasoning, but my concern is where there are lower to middle income people involved, entities involved, organizations, companies, one would pursue them because it always is economical because they're not running anywhere, etc. And so the whole concept of social justice and what is economical and uneconomical, perhaps we can just get some sort of clarification there. The other issue is the compromise issue on page 9 or paragraphs 12, 13, etc. When one agrees to these compromises, how long is this time frame where one says it's from here to here that we're looking at, that's the compromise period. You're entirely satisfied and indeed it's all above board. And then you find a year or so later, the organization begins to hit profits because you've got some new gun on board that looks at things a bit more creatively. And so on. Do you then recover the compromise, or is the compromise a definitely permanent one, or do you pursue a reinvestigation to see whether the young gun wasn't in the background and made this presentation available to key board members? Thanks.
Ms. Davidson?
Ms.
Kim, just to get a better understanding, first of all, is there any reason why we covered the undisputed? Is there any reason why we haven't discussed disputed? And is the process completely different, or any reason as I say why we haven't looked at that thing? Just looking at page 6, paragraph 7, tax debt cannot be recovered by action and judgment of a court. Now I would assume that's the final arbiter, and if it can't be recovered by a court, what are the circumstances in which a court would not be able to order a recovery? And then finally, just to get a better sense of what you're talking about, and this is no special pleading, but discussing the regulations in respect of paragraph 12, if it isn't hardship, because that's your expression, hardship is not a factor, or not the only factor, sorry. What are the typical factors that start coming through in that context? Because it gives me a sense of what cannot be done, but not a sense of what can be done. And I, just to get a balance of understanding there.
Mr.
Bishop.
Thank you, Chair. On page 5, slide, top slide, mention is made of the calculation of interest. Now, what I would like to note here is perhaps the improvement of the financial position still puts the debtor less than what is owed. Would we still calculate the interest? Or would we just take whatever we get and forget about the interest? Secondly, Chair, mention was made that we notify the debtor of the write-off. Perhaps are we able to get explanation? Is it really necessary to notify the debtor that we would have written off the debt? Lastly, I don't know if the lady didn't ask this question, I couldn't quite comprehend her question. If the person whose debt has been permanently written off gets money somehow or other and voluntarily comes to SARS to say, I know that I'm owing you 50,000 and I want to pay a court money now, what would be the position? Thank you, Chair. Lastly, Chair. Some business communities like the shops and things like that do take up to credit bureau. Do we take these people to credit bureau if we write off their debt? Do we take them to credit bureau and then do they get listed? Thanks.
I mean, that should be the reason for him to come back voluntarily. Mr. Bums.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think it is very refreshing to find that we are discussing regulations, and it really gives meaning to the principle of oversight as enunciated in the Constitution and the Acts. So for that thing is the reason I must say thank you for discussing these regulations with us to show that somebody somewhere is interested in oversight or anything, how it should be played. The point I wish to make here, Jefferson, is that as far as regulations are concerned, it has to be within and guided by the enabling piece of legislation. Other than that, a piece of regulation is not what the paper is written on. And therefore, in terms of the regulation, apart from us fully grasping that it is guided and in keeping with the intent of the enabling legislation, it will be very, very difficult for us to try and secure certain sort of amendments to the regulation. So SARS may listen, but it does not necessarily mean that they are going to adjust the regulation. I think you could understand, because it's a secondary piece of legal beef. It has standing only insofar as it is guided and subordinate to the enabling piece of legislation. Having said that, Chairperson, I just want to take the point where relatives are involved. Now, in all situations, right, like people will say that, oh, so-and-so was a member of the ANC, and therefore she should not be appointed to be a director general or a municipal manager or anything. And if 80% of the people are ANC, you're bound to find that it will be very difficult to find non-ANC people to appoint to particular job situations. Having said that again, then does that mean that if a relative is involved, how is that relative going to ensure that his or her basic rights are not being violated by virtue of being a relative to somebody who is working in SARS or is close to the commissioner? Who will make the decision? Because you can so well find that if some consideration is given, then people will say, yeah, but so-and-so, you know, sympathetically being looked upon because of the connection call. I think that must be made very, very clear, and how you handle it, because you don't want to find the credibility of a very powerful institution is now being questioned simply because somebody is connected to somebody. and why she really applied all the legitimate means to ensure that there was no connection call deciding on the decision. Then the question of the interest, right? On the interest insofar as it's talking about paragraph 4, second bullet point 1, 2, 3, the fourth point, on reinstatement of the state debt. Should this be calculated with the debt is actually being resuscitated in the sense that when that person is now able to stand on his or her own 2 feet, how it has some consideration been given to it. And finally, I just think that it is good that we have set a very good precedent, and hopefully that all others who are supposed to appear for the portfolio committee will make it a point to come and discuss regulations with them. Thank you very much.
Okay. I've got another hand. I just want to check whether there are others. Because if there are, I'm going to take you in the next batch. But if there aren't, you will be the last. Yes, of course. If there are no other hands, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to raise one question with regard to the name and shame them campaign that is usually targeted at tax evaders. So I wanted to know how public is this process of tax right of compromises. Is it public information or just something that is transparently done and kept confidential? The other thing that I wanted to just let you on is in relation to page 9, slide 2, slide number 1, paragraph 12. I want to check, you said that all those factors cannot be taken into consideration, but my interest is on bullet number 3. Can you clarify why that cannot be the case? And then lastly, Chairperson, I want to check whether the write-off is only with regard to debt, tax debt, or it can be done on interest that is accrued from a debt. Thank you.
On the social justice aspect, that's an interesting thought. The experience, though, is that it's sometimes very difficult for the low and middle income people to pay up, because they are often the people who overextend themselves more easily. When we're dealing with large taxpayers, clearly there are always exceptions that prove the rule, but typically they are easier to find and their assets are easier to get hold of. So if you're dealing with a large corporate or a wealthy, high-net-worth individual, you typically know where they are, and they've got assets that are available to satisfy a tax debt. When you move to the other side of the scale, though, it sometimes becomes a lot more difficult. So, in fact, I would suspect that you're going to be seeing a fair number of small debts being written off on this, because once you've taken the basic recovery steps and they have failed, it doesn't make sense to go and get tracing agents and lawyers involved to, you know, go after 800 grand, 500 grand. Then there was a question on page 9. This was the time frames. Once you have a permanent write-off, it is permanent. That is it. If you later turn the business around and you do well and you make profits, well that I could conceive, and I think this was the case you were postulating, that somebody was hiding information, that this turnaround was in fact already in progress. Well, then you would fall in that you have not made disclosure of material facts, part of the equation. You could be kicked out and the debt question as to why a dispute takes place is not dealt with, the answer there is that there's a separate set of fairly detailed provisions in the Income Tax Act that deal with disputed taxes, and they're dealt with in respect of those provisions. Similar concept, but obviously different factors you have to take into account as to whether you're going to settle a dispute, because then you have to start thinking about are there precedents you are not setting that you should be setting. Are you trying to settle something that in fact results in that is close to tax evasion, which you would typically not want to settle, you would want to prosecute tax evasion. So there's a different set of considerations there, so there's a different set of the question as to what we are not considering, what would exclude you from a compromise, what would we consider? Well, what we would be considering really would be the factors in paragraph 11, which are the savings in the cost of collection, earlier collections, and so forth. So those are the things that the debtor can take over. Okay, I can't pay you in full, but I can make you an offer that is better than if you were to try and collect it, put me in liquidation, do all of those things. Because you must remember, when you put someone in liquidation, often you won't realize the full value of the assets, the issues along those lines. Maybe a long drawn-out process. So if somebody can settle before we get into that process, so much the better. And that's what the regulations are trying to achieve. The question then was raised about the calculation of interest. And this is where we reinstate a temporary write-off. Bear in mind that a temporary write-off will typically be a unilateral action. In other words, SARS is going to write you off. You don't come and apply for a temporary write-off. If you're going to come and apply, you're going to go for a compromise. Okay. So this is something where SARS has said, but you know, really, this is not worth chasing after, based on the information we have available. But bear in mind that information may be incomplete. That's always something you have to bear in mind. So that's why you certainly can't make the circumstances for a temporary write-off a permanent write-off, because we do not have the full picture in this case. So then, to answer the question, the calculation of interest, if we were to find that there was less available than the debt that had been written off, so let's assume we had written off 20,000 Rand and we later discover that the person won 10,000 Rand on the lotto, and that's clearly available now for us to collect, we would do a proportionate collection and interest would still be charged. Okay. But clearly we wouldn't go and ask that we'll get you past 15 if there was only 10. So we're certainly not going to try and go over and above it. Is it necessary to notify the debtor of a permanent write-off? This was a request from commentators because the question was, well, you may discover as the debtor that your debt has been written off. Was it permanently or was it temporary? Now, at one level, that is a little disingenuous because the way you get to a permanent write-off is pretty clear. You have gone through some legal process that has extinguished the debt, or you have come to us and asked for a compromise. But just to make sure that everybody's clear, if you haven't been notified by SARS that you have got a permanent write-off, then it must be temporary. I mean, so it's just to give that little bit of certainty so that people know that once they've got that debt, that you have a permanent write-off, that's what it is. Now, if somebody has got a permanent write-off, gets some extra cash and comes and pays us, well, we'll thank that person for a very kind offer. Interestingly enough, if you go to some of the very old budget reviews, you'll discover that included in state miscellaneous revenue were so-called guilt payments and donations, where people did something wrong, they felt guilty about it, conscience money, I think it was called. And then they came and paid SARS anonymously to make up the shortfall. We don't see that frequency anymore. Essentially, though, the person doesn't have to pay because it is a permanent write-off, and quite likely we refund it. But you know, if they want to make a donation to the state, they're welcome to do that too. write off of debt? Could you be listed at a credit bureau because of it? You may be listed because you have an outstanding debt, the fact that it's been written. Okay, so in a temporary write-off, remember that it still remains outstanding. So it's quite conceivable that you would be listed. The flip side to that, though, is once you're in a compromise, the debt is settled. So the debt is there no more. So that would not give rise. Then the question of relatives being involved. And this is a thorny issue. But what we're trying to achieve is that if you happen to be the person that was considering these things for a particular office in the region, and your brother-in-law or sister's request for a write-off were to come across, for a compromise, were to come across your head, you would be expected to recuse yourself and hand it over to somebody else who had been authorized to consider this matter. And I think that's just a matter of good governance, just to make sure that there is no appearance of being influenced by your relationship with the person. There was a question as to how the interest is resuscitated. Essentially, what would happen is the interest would be treated as if this is on the reversal of a voluntary write-off, as if it had never been written off. And similarly, with a permanent write-off, where it's revoked because of a material non-disclosure or a material inaccuracy, if the agreement didn't exist in the first place, so you go back and recalculate interest as if the write-off compromise had not occurred. On the question of the naming and shaming of tax evaders, the provisions in the Income Tax Act and the Value Added Tax Act and others that permit that relates to where you've been convicted of an offence, and we have been in a position to name and shame. Because there's no offence involved here, this is a private process. So that the fact that you have come to a compromise with the Revenue Authority is a matter between you and the Revenue Authority. And that's why the reports that are provided to the Minister and the Auditor General are summarised, of course. They won't give names, addresses, and details. Okay. Obviously, in the Auditor General's case, those details can be called for because the Auditor General has the oversight role of ensuring that provisions have been applied properly. On page 9, slide 2, why does the liquidation result? Why does the liquidation preclude a compromise? Remember, what happens in a liquidation is that each debtor or each creditor, will lodge a claim with respect to what is owed. Okay. And those claims are then pooled, the assets are realized to the best advantage the liquidator can manage, and then payments are made to the various creditors. Now, if SARS compromises before that process, the claim that is going to go into the pool is already smaller. So the proportionate share will be smaller as well. So you're already in a situation where, as a result of the liquidation, it is highly likely you're only going to be getting cents in the rand. So why would you shrink your rand that you're putting into stock? So that's the reason why liquidation is not compromised, because the whole liquidation process is already going to result in most cases in a shortfall on the claim. I mean, there have been some interesting cases where liquidations have paid more than the rand in the rand, but the cases that I'm aware of, that has occurred over many years. So once you take time value of money, and I'm not sure that you think we're all that much better off. Does debt include interest? Yes, it does. So if there is a compromise, it would cover the interest, the capital, both. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I thank you for your responses of assistance and understanding the subject. It's much clearer. is the practice, the current practice. Do you want to just quickly tell the committee how in the instance where you came across this instance of the matter of the government? And what is going to become of those rules?
The current situation is that we have not been able to write or compromise yet, which is one of the reasons why our textbook has been grayed year on year, because we're building up a backlog of items that should be written. I was chatting to some of our collections people yesterday, and the person I was talking to was aware of some 400 odd cases, but in excess of 400 cases that would give rise to write-offs of around 400. So there are, and if you take it in the broader context, if you go and look at the annual report for SARS for 2005-06, which have been considered, you'll see that the total debt book was, for taxes, was 70.3 billion rand. And the amount sitting in over 9 months was 45.4 billion rand. Now, some of what's sitting in 9 months plus are disputed debts. So we're on our way to court on those, and you know, however the court rules will resolve whether that debt is payable or not. But a significant amount of that is debt that has simply accumulated over time that we have had to keep on our books because we have no ability to write them off out of our books. And so once these regulations are in place, we'll be in a position to start writing those.
Thank you. I remember
I can recall the first time when we mooted or you mooted the idea that write-offs, my concern was that it could offer space for corruption. Now, I'm not saying that the systems are in place, but I'm simply saying who is going to police the whole system to ensure that there is no abuse of this whole process, because the write-off, you know, especially you're talking about millions and billions here now, it can so easily be abused. So it's a tricky question. I don't think it's easy to answer, but what are the checks and balances, and how do you manage what would one expect, I think?
That is something we're acutely aware of, which is why we've gone to the extent of, in fact, putting in the regulations, guidelines, as this kind of record keeping.
Thank you.
Thank you.